Well, Mr. Phillips, we find ourselves recording on an interesting evening.
Well. Is this the first Tuesday recording that we've ever done? I don't know. It's one of the few, I'd say.
Is a few and far betweener on a Tuesday. And this probably won't get posted for a couple of days, but we'll get posted this week, so there's that. It's kind of funny. The urgency of the new schedule at 9 hours a day has made recording a little more prompt in me doing things. I don't have as much time to fuck around with the post. I'm like, nah, I just got to get this shit done.
Right.
So it's kind of helped, I think, and
I think, in some ways, restrictions can actually be aids in the creative process, Kevin. Having limitations or, things that you have to do kind of.
that was one of the sales jobs that the architecture staff at Kent State University sold to all of the students. And there is really something to it.
Wait, well, what was the context? I'm curious now about the sales that pitch that they were giving
Oh,
you at school.
it was the same statement is that having design criteria forces you to think outside the box.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Was just kind of the thing because sometimes it is it actually probably helps more with the start to me than anything else. Like, because you kind of have these ground rules, you kind of can get a starting point. Because sometimes when you just kind of, when it's just up to you, it's kind of hard to start something. Like, you kind of need to see it in your head before you draw it out, or whatever your kind of choice of medium is.
Right, and there can be these times when you have an idea in your head, and then you start with it and realize, an hour or so, a couple hours later, that it's not going to work the way you thought it was. So you've got to kind of like, re-go back to the drawing board, as they say. At least in my experience, this,
Yeah, well, I just did one. I've been doing all these different. I've started listening to like different music that I listened to in high school during my morning workouts, and I saw the covers to the Doors albums, and I really liked the font. And I found it a little bit tricky. I designed something for Stunt Granny for it. I posted it on ye olde Twitter at Stunt Granny. There's already some design changes that I wouldn't mind making. That I like the product that I put out there, but there are also ways to make it look a little bit nicer that I think I can that I can pull off.
All right, well, that's something to look forward to. Fans of the podcast and Stunt Granny in general, new designs potentially on the way here.
Yeah, but it is sometimes kind of having something like the Doors cover kind of spark your imagination helps.
Oh yeah, for sure.
There's other stuff like that that because I am later this week going to be listening to the Doors. That is definitely one of those high school bands that it broke through the metal that normally was blaring on my stereos.
I used to listen to a lot of the Doors. For one of the reasons is that my dad had some records that I would sometimes put on. But it seems to be a bit of a cool thing to do to trash the Doors lately, I've noticed. The
Oh.
cool kids are saying that they were hacky, I guess, not that good. So, I don't know. I always liked the organ playing. And I did like the singing too, but maybe that's just my basic white boyness shining through. I don't
Yeah, I
know.
mean, I guess I don't feel like I would nominate any of them, like aside from Jim Morrison, like a solo spot in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Like, I think Jimmy Page, if he wasn't with Led Zeppelin, probably could have gotten in at some point. And John Bonham, isn't he considered like one of the best drummers ever?
I was going to bring him up too, yeah.
So, you know, there are kind of a lot of parts to Led Zeppelin that, you know, like pretty much almost all of them, except for what the bass player is considered one of the best at their craft.
Well, yeah. So I feel like...
And none of the Doors, outside of Jim Morrison, like, I love the music. Like, that will not get twisted in this part. But I guess I can see the argument that they're presenting. They can still fuck off and I'm still going to listen to them. You know what I mean?
Right. They were, you know... I don't know. Maybe it was like the weirdness was sort of appealing, like you said, for someone in high school especially.
Yeah, people are strange, especially in context of the Lost Boys.
Oh, right.
It's something that will forever be in my brainstem somewhere. You know
what? It's ironic, Kevin. I went back and was listening to that, well, watching that movie, and that was a cover song in that on that soundtrack. That was not the Doors version of that song, and that was pretty strange because I could have sworn that was the Doors version when I had originally watched The Lost Boys. But I guess I was not much of a connoisseur in terms of being able to pick up on that kind of thing.
No, I'm really...
It was a pretty close cover.
I'm really shocked, honestly, that it was not the Doors. Because I would... I mean, I was a connoisseur, I think, even back in the day. Like, because I remember Ron introducing me to them a long-ass time ago. So, I mean, I listened to them pre-high school, really. Well, and through high school and through now, honestly, every now and again, I love listening to the Doors.
I'm sure the producers of Lost Boys would be delighted to know that they were able to pay a cheaper price to get a cover version of Stranger Things, and no one was any the wiser.
People are strange.
Oh, people are strange. Wow, Stranger Things. That's a different TV show, actually.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing altogether. Well, Ken, our topics were a whole different thing altogether,
speaking
too.
Speaking of Stranger Things, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, we could tie in either way there. We've had this topic come up before. Honestly, I applaud this headline from Gizmodo. Because
you know, a lot of times we are not kind to the headline writers of our fair country.
And this was salacious, to which I commend them. Like, they are not hiding being a little outlandish with their headline, in my opinion. Because the headline is, "We've got the meat. Scientists unearth final ingredient to the forbidden sandwich." Right.
So this is a bit of an update to I guess we can call it a trend at this point. Does it take at least three stories to be a trend?
Well, it does seem like a lot of things have been found that are extremely old and have been frozen for a long ass time.
Sure.
But
even beyond that.
Well, I mean, how many times have we heard about this many things being unearthed from, like, because how old? Oh, 30 to 40,000 years ago?
Yeah, so I guess we can maybe put a little meat on these bones here for the story.
But
so this was a find in Russia. The Northeastern Federal University unveiled the carcass of a type of horse that roamed the Yakutia region sometime between 30,000 and 40,000 years ago. It was found during an expedition to a crater, and thanks to permafrost, the young horse had been preserved to a degree that stunned the researchers. Apparently, the coat was intact. The picture is, I mean, the horse does not look like it's been embalmed or anything. Like, I guess, you know, I guess
no,
preservation is sort of a bit of a, in the eye of the beholder in some ways, but I can see what they're talking about with this, with this animal.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely looks like it has some skin and bones left. Even though it was in permafrost, there definitely was...
I'm just getting the close-up look here. A nostril, I think it is, maybe?
Oh, yeah, because there are definitely hairs in there.
Pretty close. A pretty detailed look there at the animal.
Hey, yeah.
A little horse, apparently, Kevin. They think it was about 2 months old at the time it died, which would have been, as we said, about 30,000 years ago. So it's about 30,000 years and 2 months old, I guess you could say.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, they found it on August 11th, and they're, I guess, doing a... They didn't expect to find it, so they're coming up with a strategy on how they want to research and study it to get a better understanding of its habitat and diet. And they are going to do a full dissection at some point. So, pretty smart. You know, sometimes I can remember when I would go to the store and find something, and I could barely wait to get home to open it up and see what was inside, Kevin. But I think these researchers are smart to be a little more prudent in how they're investigating. Because I guess once you open up, you know, there's things you aren't going to be able to study anymore, right, from the outside.
Well, yeah, I mean, you legit, obviously, decomposition is taking place at this juncture. It is not in permafrost anymore.
Right.
You know, like, because... Yeah, I would definitely say that you can tell that some type of decay happened. Like, I don't think this thing was plunged into the permafrost, like, overnight. you know, but, yeah, it's good to take your time and figure out what you want to do. And, of course, when this news came about, as with our other story that we've been alluding to...
because there was other examples that we've covered lately about such things being found, and then for some reason someone has decided it's a good idea to eat it. I think actually there's, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but there might actually only be one chance where this, or one instance where this actually did happen, where someone actually did eat the thing in question. Am I mistaken here?
Yeah, because there was the buffalo. Was it buffalo? I'm trying to think, because they served it as a stew, trying to make sure the oldness did not come out. Because it was something around this time period, years old, you know? Like, I want to say it was 30 to 40,000 years old.
Yes. So they actually did make a seemingly disgusting stew, from what we know.
Yeah, I really could have looked up or tried to look up which OPA this is on. But
I think you're right about the buffalo.
Yeah, it was something of that nature.
We also covered on the show a mysterious black sarcophagi that was found in what's that, Egypt?
I think so, yeah.
I don't think we covered, in that case, but this is still worth noting, that when they did open that sarcophagus, which some people, of course, thought was potentially cursed, it just contained a skeleton and some red juice, with no curse, apparently. But here's the interesting thing. 32, and this is what kind of pricked my ears up when I heard it.
Yep.
32,000 people signed a petition demanding the right to drink the bone juice from the sarcophagus. I have to assume that not all of those people would actually drink that bone juice if somebody showed up with a little canister. They're like, hey, we're going around to everybody who signed the petition. thank you for taking part. In our civics, modern day society, here you go.
I would love to see that video. That would be a video that I would pay for. I have $25 just waiting for that to happen.
As you know, this was a binding.
Maybe I will
petition.
Go like full like UFC pay-per-view price, like $60 to see some of these people get popped with that. Because yeah, I agree. I bet you there are some people that signed the petition just to be smartasses.
Well, I wonder if there's anyone who didn't sign it just to be a smart ass. I mean, could there be someone who honestly wanted to drink that bonus juice?
Yeah.
There, I mean, probably somebody, but would they? Yeah. Okay. All right. But then would they?
Weirdly, there's no doubt in my mind.
But let's imagine that Venn diagram, you know, people who sign the petition, right? That's the bigger circle. And then we have a smaller circle, or a fairly large circle of people who are just screwing around.
Yeah. In this instance, somebody, I agree with you. Like,
the people who would actually want to drink the bone juice, are they going to be together enough to be able to sign the petition, I think, is my question. So, like, would there be... So, any of the people who signed the petition, would there be any actual partakers in that? Or would the people... And my theory is that the people who would actually drink the bone juice may not have it together enough to actually sign the petition.
I think someone...
Is there people that are in that sweet spot of being functional enough to sign a petition?
Well,
be aware of a petition. Maybe they've got their Google alerts going for, bone juice discoveries.
Yeah, I think there's some weirdo that definitely signed up for that. That if that video happens, it's like becomes an episode of Fear Factor, which I'm in for too. Like, I mean, I'm not signing up for this just to see people... like vomit, like as soon as they like smell probably the stench of this liquid.
Yeah, it can't smell good, right? I mean,
no, there is no way this smells good. not even a little bit.
I mean, if you like,
because there are a lot of, because there are just reactions that are going to run the gamut. Because that's different. Like the stew meat is one thing. Like they were purposely trying to hide that. Like, if you're just asking to drink juice, like, you're going a little more hardcore. You're not doing any cooking. Right. You know, you're not doing any masking with any other ingredients.
Now, okay, I guess they didn't necessarily say they weren't going to do any kind of cooking. But you're right, that from what we know of the text of the petition,
they were just going to be drinking the bone juice. It said in the article that they were drinking the bone juice.
Although,
like a bunch of fucking weirdos.
This article does go on to recount some of the other food items that had been found, like a 14,000-year-old bread and a 3,200-year-old cheese. This would be enough to make a hypothetical sandwich, as the article headline had referred to.
Yeah, that hypothetically sounds terrible. I'm going to throw that out there.
They do recommend mixing the sarcophagus juice with equal parts water and bringing it to a boil as part of the preparation of this in theory meal that they're talking about here.
I hope so.
I guess a lunch. I'm not sure if you'd want to make this dinner.
No, it's just gross.
You try to give yourself time to recover before you have to go to bed. I don't know if that's going to work, though.
Like, I'm up for eating some weird stuff, or stuff that maybe people think is weird now, but, man, I have no desire to drink something like that, or eat something like that.
No. I mean... I could possibly see myself signing that petition, though, which is really making me think I want
to
make sure
someone
it's
might
not,
come to your
legal
door.
Yeah, right. I mean, really read those fine print to make sure that's not a legally binding petition that is going to require you to drink bone juice or else face criminal, breach of contract type consequences. So I don't know. I'm hoping that's not the case, Kevin. Although 32,000 people, they would have to split that up pretty small, I would think.
Yeah, that would be like a shot, I would think, at best.
If you're lucky? I don't know. That's probably not the right
word. Oh, I forgot about the other story that I was just scrolling through because I didn't find the bison one. I forgot that we did the story. It was OPA 106 that the guy served his own amputated leg to his friend.
Oh, God. I was trying not to bring that up because I found that so very gross. I could hardly get through that topic when we were talking about it the first time.
I feel like I'm skipping. I feel like the old eating or the eating the old bison was somewhere, but I'm not catching it from my my own headlines, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, sharp-eared listeners will be able to find that back in the archives somewhere.
I would imagine so.
Sharp-eared. Oh, we did talk about this headline a little bit, but are you a fan of the We Have the Meat advertising jingle from Arby's, Kevin?
Oh, well, it does feature 1H John Benjamin, whom I have found quite amusing in a number of things, including, and most importantly, in my opinion, Archer.
Mm. Yeah, he's always solid, I feel like, in everything he does, just about. Also an author, apparently. Wrote a book a few years back.
Oh.
I think it was like a memoir of sorts. But still, seemed like an interesting interesting story. I also like the We Have the Meats. And there's a... yeah. It's
You made me start thinking about Where's the Beef for some reason.
See, that's a similar one. I don't know. Something...
But those are two very different spokespersons.
Simple statements about, you know, meat products seems like the way to go for for marketing stand, you know, virality, if you will, or...
Yeah, I mean...
We didn't used to call it virality back in the Where's the Beef days, but...
I did not need Mr. Benjamin to be doing those commercials to frequent Arby's every now and again. Mm-hmm. I was already a person who would occasionally hit the Arby's.
Yeah, well, me too. So I just feel like I feel like it's maybe cooler to hit the Arby's.
I know that there's some people out there that are not Arby's fans.
Ugh.
That may listen to the podcast. That I know that I believe Jeremy is definitely one of those. He is not one for the roast beef.
How can you not like curly fries? I mean, why would you have regular fries when you can have curly fries? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm very for the curly fries.
I knew there was a reason we were friends, Kevin.
Well, another reason we're friends is we can watch some weird videos before we start the show. And just randomly add a topic.
Oh, that's true. I guess
to said show. And this one happened to be titled "How Hard Can You Hit a Golf Ball?" I believe
that was the question that they were posing.
And it is two YouTube stars, both of whom I do not remember their names offhand, but they are popular YouTubers. Who do scientific studies.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to breaking news here. the channel we watched was called Smarter Every Day, and the guy's name is Destin, I want to say. And then he partnered with a guy named Mark Rober, who also had some other, you know, has his own YouTube channel with engineering projects. And what I was familiar with him from was the giant super soaker gun that you may have seen.
Oh, yeah.
That was capable of firing a stream that was able to cut a watermelon in half. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I do remember you showing me that video at some point because the Destin character is like, oh, you've got to know this guy. And I'm like, the name does not ring a bell whatsoever. But then when I saw the giant super soaker, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, I've definitely seen this guy's videos.
And, yeah, the channel we were watching, Smarter Every Day, there's all other cool videos on there and stuff that I feel like he does a pretty good job of kind of, you know, being educational while making some, like, kind of crazy videos.
Yeah.
And this was really no exception, I would say.
Yeah, because they definitely, some of these educational videos, I'm like, man, I really hope that they're getting paid well. Because, I mean, that is, while it's kind of ridiculous, the whole video in a lot of ways, It was very entertaining, and there was definitely a lot, because I mean, it looked like a typical episode to me of oh shit, why am I it's the show that got canceled and came back.
Yep, I think I know what you're saying.
Mythbusters? Mythbusters, yeah.
Yay. Yeah, it looked like that was...
Why was that so hard? But, I mean, it was very similar. Like, there wasn't a myth, obviously, to bust in this equation. But he kind of answers science questions.
Yeah, it was basically, you know, how hard can you hit the golf ball? But more specifically, like, how hard can a golf ball be impacted and still retain its shape? So that was kind of the question that we were trying to reach during the course of this video.
Yeah, because to make it more entertaining, he obviously took a very extended view at the question.
Yes, and some excellent use of slow motion, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, and so he started out just trying to hit the a golf ball, just to see what that would do to it, and, you know, did slow motion. He even tried the old Billy Madison swing, which is running up to it and swinging the club.
I had to just, while he was doing that and while we were watching that, it just reminded me back of our topic last week with the new baseball swing and how they're... The players will be like stepping forward while they're swinging, and it is almost a little bit of a Billy Madison, except for baseball, I guess. Less exaggerated, certainly. Yeah. I don't think you can take quite as much of a running start as he did, and still swing at a baseball.
No, that would be really hard.
You do have to stay in that little white box, I think. Right? Isn't that?
That is correct. I'm not sure if there are rules prohibiting you from running up to it or in golf itself.
Oh, right.
You know, that you need to be stationed. Like,
it is always possible that Billy Madison is, or Happy Madison, wait, Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Oh, yeah. Is not wrong one.
Is not a, you know, scientifically accurate movie.
A sports accurate movie.
Or even sports accurate, right.
Yeah, I guess it'd be interesting to see someone, obviously this guy is much better at engineering than he is at golf.
Right.
But, you know, it'd be interesting to see someone like, you know, let's say Tiger Woods take a crack at doing something. Like, I don't think he's going to create the failure that they were going for.
Yes, no. because of what it took for them to actually get to that failure. Yes. Failure.
Which is always a fun part about any of the Mythbusters. It's just like, oh no, we're just going to go over the top with this now. Like, they kind of find the answer to the question, and then it's like, oh, well, how do we supersize this thing?
Yeah.
how do we supersize this experiment? And these guys kind of, that's another reason why it kind of, to me, drew parallels between the two.
Yeah, his background is an engineer, I believe, and... The point he was, you know, making, the main educational point, I guess, was different materials have points at which they are malleable, and then they will just go back to what their original shape was. And that was the first kind of deformation that he was talking about. And then at some point it gets to be too much, and then it is a plastic deformation, meaning it changes shape. It won't go back to its original shape. Kind of like paperclips, he was saying, like, if you move a paperclip a little bit, it'll go back. Too much, it'll bend. And then if you bend it way too far, it'll break, which is what he was hoping to achieve with some of these golf balls.
Yeah.
So, under the slow-mo conditions, it was super cool to be able to see, you know, like you said, first with the swinging of the golf ball, you could see the swinging of the golf club.
Yeah,
you could see the he wasn't swinging a tennis club. No,
that's totally weird. Different.
Yeah, he hit the ball, and you could see the ball squishing and expanding back again, and like that bounce is what, you know, obviously gives the ball the ability to travel so far. But you normally don't think of the golf ball normally as being solid, but under these conditions, you can see it actually. Deforming, which was cool.
Yeah, you just never really see it in its deformed state. But, because your eyeball just isn't good enough to catch that.
No, it's kind of crazy how bad our eyes are when you think about it.
Yeah, in the scope of things, our eyes are trash.
Like, to be able to be tricked by, 24 frames per second and to actually think that that looks real, it's not a great indictment for our eyes. I'm not sure how many frames per second real life is, but I'm thinking it's a lot more than that.
A skosh higher.
But what we were talking about golf balls. So the next step up, I guess, was to attach a golf club to this swinging arm apparatus, I guess.
Yeah,
that allowed it to kind of swing in an arc that it would for a normal golf swing, but then attach some chemical rockets onto it so that it would get up to a good speed.
Yeah, and then this still did not cause the ball to get to this plastic zone that you were talking about.
Yeah, it makes for some cool slow-mo shots, though.
And you definitely saw, if you're paying attention to the deformation of the ball, obviously, since they start small and go big, it just starts to deform more and more as you watch these videos. And clearly, because he is definitely not a pro golfer or even an amateur golfer, there was quite a jump from what he was doing to the ball to what this rocket-powered club was doing to the ball.
Yeah, they were thinking that this was even harder than a pro golfer would be able to hit the ball. They don't have rockets attached to their clubs. And this was to swing freely and just, rotate and keep picking out speed.
Yeah, because they kind of had a tee that they moved into place.
Right.
When they felt like they were up to maximum speed.
Yeah, the tee would almost rotate with the ball on top and then face up and put itself in the path of the swinging club, which was kind of a fun little little thing to see.
Yeah, I think that was an understated cool part of that machine that they didn't really talk about too much in the video.
No, I liked it. I liked that, though. The little rotating tee that popped the ball up when it was time to get smacked by the rocket-powered club. But, like you said, this still was not giving the results that they wanted. So, they stepped it up to a vacuum cannon, which I don't know if I'd ever seen before, but it's a super cool idea.
I've definitely seen, I feel like I've seen something like this, because I feel like maybe some of the potato guns, I know I've seen some supersized potato guns, and I feel like they use the vacuum theory, and because I don't know if anyone does that in that pumpkin chunkin' contest.
Oh.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that. You might need to have to just, physically move that. There's always kind of these weird kind of, again, rules, man, to keep me down.
That's right. The man with his pumpkin chunking rules, always looking to, put down the little guy who's just trying to chuck his pumpkins in the most efficient way possible.
But, I feel like I've seen something like this before, but it is similar to a potato gun, because they added on an additional tube that was larger in diameter than the other one, they made a vacuum in the first tube that contained the ball at the very end of it, close to the larger one that was just pressurized air.
Yeah, so they pressurized the air behind the ball, then opened up the tube with the vacuum, which allowed all the air to rush in, which, since the tube was only big enough, just big enough for the ball, all the air trying to get into that vacuum was now pushing the ball forward.
Without friction.
And there's no friction in front of the ball because there's no air, so it's able to, get up to ridiculous speeds inside that barrel, So yeah, they were saying they were able to get up to 500 miles per hour shooting a golf ball without any explosives or anything. So that's always nice.
Yeah, and they had it slamming into an anvil of all things, which again, when that ball, I think the amazing thing was is that because did they ever get it to completely deform on any of the hits?
They got it to get to that plastic zone so that it was kind of smushed looking afterwards. Like it wasn't a perfect sphere anymore. But they weren't able to actually destroy any of the new balls without first cutting through some of the layers. Because it seems like there's layers of rubber or like rubber bands inside that are kind of...
Yeah, there's a couple of layers to golf balls. Now, of course, I don't know how they're made. I do remember taking some apart back in the day when I did do a little bit of golfing.
Okay.
but, yeah, clearly, like anything else, the technology has moved forward. Because, I mean, I know that baseballs are made a little bit different.
Yep.
Footballs, I think, are made a little bit different, at least.
Yeah, it was cool to watch in the slow motion, especially at some of the, like, the higher speeds that they were able to get with the vacuum cannon, because the balls were, like, completely compressing, like, into, like, smushed Play-Doh almost looking.
Yeah, it almost looked like it was not flat,
right?
But a disc.
Yes, like a puck almost or something.
Yeah, or a puck.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like smushed down to like a puck size or shape. So
yeah, that was pretty badass to see that.
And then see it bounce back. But, you know, for some of those, they were still, like we said, afterwards deformed. But then they were just going to decide to have some fun, I think, and decide to, instead of having an anvil, set up a golf club as the target just to see what would happen if a golf club were to make contact with a ball at this speed. And the golf clubs did not stick up too well from that impact.
No, it is pretty clear. Like you, I mean, we already said that they were shooting this at higher speeds than anyone, you know, a pro golfer. Like even with the rocket propelled one, it was more than a golfer could hit. So, I mean, I guess it wasn't terribly surprising to see these clubs get destroyed, but to see the level of destruction, because they did they do two that didn't, there was nothing behind them. Yeah. And then the third one, they had the anvil directly behind the club head so that it didn't have anywhere to travel, you know, it didn't. You take up some of that kinetic energy with a swing.
Yeah, it wasn't able to you know, swing backwards and kind of you know, expand some of that energy that way. So yeah, that's right. It was forced to basically deform itself to absorb that energy, and it was enough to like snap the head off the club and make a huge you know, divot. Destroy the head of the club. So
yeah, in several locations, because I mean, it destroyed the top of the club, and then as you saw it rotate, you saw like a ripple at the bottom of it, that there had just been a crack that had formed, just this giant fault line, which again, when I guess when something's going that fast, it's a lot of fun to watch that video, but obviously destruction was their plan.
At that point, yeah. I mean, and who can blame them? When you have that kind of tools and you're already set up and you've got already cool footage, you know, you might as well try to push it all the way, and kudos to them.
Yeah, and of course, evidently, the guest host, we talked about the super soaker that cut through a watermelon. Oh, that was their coup de grace, so to speak.
I almost don't want to spoil the watermelon. If people watch that video for themselves.
If you go to the... even if you want to skip some of the physics lessons part of this episode, which you could do when he's talking about the plastic state,
Right.
And just catch the video part. It's yeah, we'll leave that part unspoiled for you. since we always link this stuff in the write up.
Yeah.
And we usually tweet it out too. So just kind of keep an eye out for it. It'll be there. Trust me.
It's worth checking out anyway.
well, Ken, one thing that I would enjoy checking out.
Oh, Kevin, we're killing it. We're doing great on these segues, Kevin. I don't want to jinx us, but
we are on a roll, baby. I would love to go to the new Star Wars park in Disneyland.
Yeah.
It would actually force me to go to Disneyland and not Disney World, which I have been to a couple of times now.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a new Star Wars park.
Yep.
At Disneyland in the California location. And that will actually make me travel there because as much as I have enjoyed Disney, like, and I think I've probably talked about it on the show before, I was definitely more of a Hanna-Barbera man and a Looney Tunes guy growing up. Disney movies, I am quite familiar. The contributions are pretty amazing. But yeah, not really that much of a Disney guy. They have definitely, Disney has certainly bought a lot of properties that helped shape my youth at this juncture.
Well, yeah, at this point.
Between Marvel and Star Wars.
ESPN, I mean, etc. Of course, I don't think they have that.
That wasn't Disney childhood, World. But that definitely formed my college years. I still can't believe that I went from... The first thing I would watch was CNN because it usually had the scores on it. Because, like, ESPN went off the air or ESPN didn't exist at that juncture.
Oh.
Or maybe it just wasn't in the cable package because it isn't as ubiquitous as it is today.
Yeah, I think CNN was before ESPN. You're right there.
So, yeah, because I always remember not believing that... Penguins game had just ended in the early spring spring semester when indeed it did because it was in four overtimes. I was like, what the fuck did I miss? I was in studio the whole time. I would have loved to have had the internet back then. No Wi-Fi at that age. But anyway, there isn't really Wi-Fi. that was way off topic. But let's drag it back to the Star Wars talk here, Ken.
Right. So have you been to Universal Studios at all, Kevin?
No, I have not been to Universal Studios either.
Okay.
Which I guess I forgot that because is it the Universal Studios in Orlando or is that the California one that has the Harry Potter?
They have World. That in Orlando.
Oh, okay.
And that is what I was thinking about because I was there earlier this year with the fam. We went down there to visit Jackie's dad, who is in Clearwater down there, and spent 2 days at Universal. It was quite an experience, I got to say. And it sounded, just from reading this article, that they were putting similar levels of attention to detail into the crafting of this Star Wars exhibit as they did for the Harry Potter Wizarding World that they'd had at Universal Studios.
I guess that was the interesting thing about this article that was in the Atlantic. But they're talking about how people want to be in an immersive world when they go to these places because there are definitely certain things where, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disney World, I'm just going to throw it out there, I do not feel immersed in the world of Johnny Depp right. and whatever his name is. I'm trying to think of it in the movie. Jack Sparrow, yeah.
Captain Jack Sparrow, yeah.
So, you know, I guess I haven't been to any of these places that have really done it up. Like, I know that there's an Attack on Titan park in Japan that I am all for going to.
Is there, like, interactive titans that are chasing you down?
You can pose in a titan like you're being eaten.
Huh. Great.
I enjoyed that quite a bit when I saw that.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense to kind of, you've got to do more to impress people these days. So having an immersive world is, to me, par for the course in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it really was impressive there at Wizarding World. Just I don't know how they'll have the experience exactly, but it definitely felt like you weren't like part in the rest of the Universal Park. Like, and it was, I don't know, I might have talked about this even before on the show, but there wasn't like a sign that says like Harry Potter World this way. Like, you kind of ended up like going through this little alley and having to know that it's there. I mean, it's on the map, but there's no sign to tell you that like this is where the way to go.
So, oh, okay, that's pretty awesome.
So you kind of like go down this little alley and turn a corner, and suddenly like they're playing like the Harry Potter music is playing in there from the movies. Like,
uh-huh.
Everything looks like you're really Diagon Alley. Yeah. So like all the shop signs and everything look, you know, like there are the wood planks and things like that. There's no like Universal branding or anything like that. You know, you go to buy your butter beer and
badass.
Yeah, you can actually like purchase, you know, wizard money, which is basically like tokens that you can spend at anything inside of the Wizarding World area. So yeah, they're really into the whole experience. And then there's like wand shops you go to that are everything in the candy shops, everything's all decked out look real.
Did you buy yourself a wand?
I did not buy myself a wand, but
can you be measured for a wand?
Well, there is a wand choosing kind of I won't call it a ceremony. It's more of a interactive theater thing, which is one of the things that, you know, you would talk about that in the Star Wars thing as well, because
yeah,
there was like an actor who would you kind of go through a script and, you know, ask someone from the audience to come up and do some tests, and there'd be like lights flashing or sounds or different effects going on, and you know, they had a British accent and it was all very impressive.
Well, I do like the idea because it sounds like they have developed some ideas that haven't quite completely hit. Because they were talking about having an app, and if you did certain things, it would say whether you're on the light side or the dark side, and that might change the way some of the characters interact with you. When the article was written, or at least when they went, it was not fully functional. So they said it did not do much for them in particular, but I could definitely, I would imagine after some amount of time that you could get that straight. Like, that's one of those things that it might take a little bit, but it sounds like a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
You know, because they said that Kylo Ren was just wandering around in his daily life, and you could possibly be berated by him.
Okay. That's pretty interesting, because there's and they were saying in the Star Wars area there was different places you could go to, sort of like quests or little mini games that you would complete tasks inside the app. You know, they had something similar with the wands at Harry Potter. You could go to different areas and cast your spells. There was little stations where you could cast your spell and see different effects happen. So it sounded a little hokey at first, but to actually kind of go there and live through it it is very impressive. It does kind of make you think like you're in a different place, you know. Takes you out of your everyday life in a way, and I guess that's kind of what a lot of people are looking for. So I can see the popularity. It also reminds me of Westworld, which I don't think you've watched that one, Kevin.
But
that
was HBO show. I have still not ponied up to watch HBO, but I may be doing that soon, and like do a complete like after the fact on Game of Thrones, basically.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're kind of hitting at a low tide there for that one. A lot of people are.
Yeah, I know how angry everyone is about the finale.
Right.
And I look forward to like powering through that thing and being angry about the finale. But it just seems like people are never happy with finales at this point. So it's just like, what? It's like one of those ones where, when I was buying a washer and dryer, or some other major refrigerator. Like, people, the only ratings online were, like, one-star ratings. Like, this refrigerator sucks. It's pretty much for, like, every refrigerator, and it's just like, okay, whatever, man. You just need to buy one.
Well, I think that's a pretty good comparison there, because the only people you're hearing from are the ones who really didn't like it, and that's probably the case with a lot of these finales as well, because the people who are motivated enough to actually go out there and be the loudest voices, and or leave reviews on appliance websites are the people who are having the most negative experiences, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know. My take on Game of Thrones, they just lost their way after they were caught up to where the books were. They were much better at adapting, and and I don't mean to say like that's nothing, because I think they did, that can be done really poorly, but they did actually a really good job of it. It was just when it came to actually fleshing out like the kind of outline that they had of what was going to happen next, that they kind of, we're having some troubles there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be kind of weird to be writing a story that isn't yours, just to finish out a TV show.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine,
especially since it seems like George R.R. Martin is not really interested in finishing his book series at all. I saw some headline about him doing some other project now that was not Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I didn't really get into the headline, but I'm like, whatever, man. Like, I haven't read the books, and I haven't really seen the TV show, so
it's gonna be tough for him to pull it off, I feel like.
But yeah. I could see people being like the Star Wars thing. I could definitely see some people being very interested in a Game of Thrones, it's like someone building Westeros so that people can come and visit it,
right? And then if eventually they can populate it with human-seeming androids that you're able to actually slice their heads off with swords, if you like, then we will have perhaps the Game of Thrones Westworld crossover that people would, I'm sure, love. And HBO would probably love as well, just as a way to get some more good feelings going there, maybe. Although I'm not sure that would do it. Anyway, forget it, HBO, if you're listening. That's a terrible idea.
Pay no mind, man. Pay no mind.
There's a reason that I'm not running a home box office. Is that what that stands for?
Yeah. Yes.
But the thing that I wasn't crazy about from this article is that it sounded like the Millennium Falcon ride was kind of not so great. That was kind of the part that they were.
I was not surprised that the article, and to just back it up a little bit, that Disney does a great job of making you not bored while you're in line.
Okay.
Or at least they do the best that they can do.
Right.
While you're in line, for you not to be bored. Like, there's lots of, videos and because they were talking about how you go through the ship as you're getting to actually being on the ship. Then you go through cargo bays and other things like that. Like, they always do shit to distract you from the fact that you are in line for entirely too long. That's why you always buy a fast pass if you can.
Did you go the fast pass route?
Yes. The last time we went with the family, we did the fast pass route.
Yeah, probably should have. We end up not doing that, but at Universal, here's a pro tip for the people out there. They have a single rider line that you can get into, and it's usually a lot faster, with the idea being that you may not be able to sit next to someone you want to, right? Because they kind of put you in to like fill seats, basically, in that line. But me and Kennedy did that before and lucked out. We're able to sit right next, in the same car together. So, and we got through a lot faster. So, pro tip, if you don't feel like paying for the Fast Pass, try the single rider line. Keep an eye out for that. But yeah, it sounds like they did a good job with this Galaxy's Edge thing overall.
Yeah, and I know that I've already seen, when you posted this article, I had seen a number of professional wrestlers post pictures from Galaxy's Edge already, and I was kind of jealous. And then our good friend who lives out in California, well, I shouldn't say good friend, our friend from the fine city of Altoona, Pennsylvania, Chris, lives out there now and was already there. I think the best part of the Millennium Falcon deal is being able to take your picture at the the Jedi chess table.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I would say.
And just to be inside there would be great. Like, it's just funny because I was at the, there's, you know, part of Universal, there's like a Simpsons area as well. And so you can go into Krusty Burger and get a surprisingly good burger. I mean, I was watching them make it. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good. But I don't know what kind of seasoning they were using, but it was really good. I was just really hungry. I don't know.
They're putting a little extra Krusty sauce on there, motherfucker.
But then, actually, they also had a Moe's Bar where you could go in and get a beer. So, like, just that stuff was surprisingly affecting for me, I think. Like, just I'm being a fan of The Simpsons, I guess. And I have a feeling I'd be the same way if I went to Galaxy's Edge inside the Millennium Falcon. It would be pretty cool, I would say.
Yeah, like I said, I look forward to going there someday. It will not be this year, but and I'll have to go down to the Harry Potter Wizarding World because I know that my niece enjoyed that, and I'm sure I would enjoy that myself.
It was pretty neat. If you go there in the earlier part of the year, they have hot butter beer, which apparently is considered superior. They don't have it in the summertime, but.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want anything hot in the summertime.
No. So we were down there in April, which they still had the hot butter beer. So if you're in there going
another
spring,
pro tip for
if
you're everyone.
Going to spring break territory, yeah, you can get the get some of that hot butter beer.
Yeah, if WrestleMania is ever in Orlando again, the hot butter beer is is still going to be on tap since it's the beginning of April.
Yeah, this has kind of turned into a little bit of a travel podcast here.
Well, Ken, this beer, you can travel to a lot of different places. I would say all of the places in the United States, and drink this one, because, New Belgium is out of, Colorado.
The only thing is, I didn't know if this one was like a seasonal, thing for them or not, because this, could have been related to the festivities in April. With their
I'm not sure. It doesn't really say on Untappd. It is the Hemperer, It is an American IPA from New Belgium. Because, oh yeah, they're out of Fort Collins. They have a facility down in North Carolina somewhere. Shit, I'm trying to think of where that is. But anyway, it might be, because I don't think it's Charlotte. But anyway, it's down there. So they have an East Coast brewery too. So you should be able to find these guys just about anywhere. 7% ABV, 55 IBUs, Ken. What says you about this beverage?
I don't know. I just really enjoyed it.
I'm always a little bit shocked when I completely disagree with other people rating the beer. I have three friends who have it at 2.92 and an overall at 3.59, which is just kind of a fairly average beer. I just about ran out of that earlier in the show. I kind of purposely milked this one. I guess, honestly, if you're looking for an IPA, maybe it isn't quite hoppy enough.
Mm.
I would say at 55 IBUs, you are kind of treading close to pale ale territory, which, you know, might be part of my like of it. I'm okay with something a little less hoppy in that department.
Yeah, I was expecting a bit of a gimmicky beer, I guess, because of the name Hemperer. Just seemed seems a little gimmicky to me.
Yeah, understood.
But it was pleasantly surprising for me. I enjoyed it. So yeah, if you see it, go out and give it a shot.
Okie dokie. For the brand, at Stunt Granny, I'm at DeFrango11. That is at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.